Zebulun and Naphtali. I think we should have our parish travel group have a tour there, huh? Let's get into our planes and fly over to Zebulun and Naphtali. What's the story? What's this all about? Well, here's the situation. The year is 733. Assyria is gobbling up all kinds of countries, and they capture the northern kingdom of the Jews, which is Israel. And, of course, part of that is what we call now present Galilee and that part of the world. So that fell to the Assyrians. But the Assyrians, like Tito did in Yugoslavia, wanted to make sure that his kingdom didn't have resistance groups. So he displaced people. He moved people from here to there. And soon, the people living in Zebulun and Naphtali were no longer Jewish. They were non-Jews. This is very important because the prophecy of Isaiah is saying, and maybe there's a real hint here of why we're sitting here today following a first century Jew. He basically perceived that this people who had wandered from the light of the covenant would actually be brought once again, not to become Jewish, but to become part of the covenant again. Isn't that interesting? That was the prophecy, that these people who have lost their way and have gotten out of the light of being the people of the covenant would, even though they aren't any longer practicing Jews, would become part of the light of the kingdom. That was the prophecy. And of course, then we have our own understanding that Jesus, after his wrestling with what he was called to do, does not go back to his hometown of Nazareth, which is really a side, small little town. Nothing happened there. He went to Capernaum, which was on the Via Israelita, which was a major trade route where there was all kinds of people coming. And so it was a metropolis compared to Nazareth, where all kinds of new ideas. But it was Gentile, not Jew. And so he was there. Now, I just want to add one little thing. If I read the full reading, if we did the long form, but our boss told me to read only the short form. But in the long form, the next series of words is Jesus calling the disciples. Now, think about that. According to our tradition and our mythic story, he gets 12 people, right? They couldn't be more different. As a matter of fact, he gets two competing fisherman companies. He's got Peter as a fisherman company and the Zebedee company, and he puts these two guys who are competing together. He's got a college educated with just down in the dirt normal folk. He's got thinkers. He put together a band of very different people. So what is the underlying tone here? People who were once Jews are no longer Jews. Now that's a division. You've got people of very different personality and different professions in the same group working with you. That adds the possibility of divisions. Just see what's going on here. That is why this message of light and darkness and the concept of unity fits in so beautifully than what Paul says about one of the first Christian communities. Would you believe it? They actually had divisions in the first followers of Jesus in Corinth. Can you believe that? That there were people who really liked Apollo. And I guess Apollo was the centerfold for any kind of preacher of his day. He was young, he was beautiful, and he was eloquent. You know, just like some of the priests we have here. and then there was Paul, you know, Paul, the organizer. And then you had Cephas. Even Peter had been there, and so there were people who liked Peter. And guess what? They were in different camps. They were possibly reflecting exactly what might have gone on with the first 12. Like Bears fans and Packer fans. We just seem to be people who love being in camps, don't we? And that's exactly what this whole reading is about, is no, it's time for unity. It is time for unity. That's the message that Jesus brings. Let's realize that Abba loves each and every one of us and every other person as a child of Abba. And that makes us all brothers and sisters. And that we cannot let division actually separate us. As a matter of fact, if you wanted to take today's readings as a litmus of what a Christian is, any organization that calls itself Christian and promotes division is not Christian. That would be the takeaway. That anything that would promote division, and we Catholics were great at that at one time. That's why last week when we had the seven Christian communities gather here for a prayer service, to me celebrated a step in the right direction, because just think of what we can use and have used in the past for separating ourselves. Democrat, Republican, Catholic, and one of those other organizations of the Protestant tradition, a Jew and Christian, Buddhist, Muslim. We have so many ways. Young, old, pretty, ugly. You know, you name it. We can come up with something, and we do. And so therefore, we have actually so much resistance to the very simple, beautiful message of Jesus that we are all loving brothers and sisters is the goal. And how do we do that? How do we not allow these natural craters in our relationships called divisions from actually stopping us from being the one who follows Christ? And I ask us how we can do that at this parish. First of all, do we live up to everybody is welcome? Anybody who comes here should be welcome. People who like a very conservative Catholicity, those who like a very liberal Catholicity, for those who don't care at all what kind of Catholicity, but are here. I mean, we should be welcoming everybody. Orientation is not a division. You name it. There shouldn't be any kind of thing if we really are following Jesus of Nazareth. So, my question to you then is, if that is the case, and that's the message of today's scriptures, what are your suggestions as a practical way of working against what is naturally active right here, right now, that drives us apart rather than allows us to look at each other and just see not the division, but another fellow human being, just like we are. Okay?